My name is Douglas Berger, and this is Glass City Humanist. I spend each episode talking about humanist values and how to apply them in our lives. I might also interview humanists or friends of humanism to find out their unique take on the humanist philosophy. In this episode, we find out why the next local battle over abortion takes place in an old parking lot. Next, I talk about plans for post-pandemic restriction time for our local group, the Secular Humanists of Western Lake Erie. And finally, I talk about how humanists can respond to a recent religious freedom violation while still rejecting the religious beliefs being violated. Glass City Humanist is an outreach project of the Secular Humanists of Western Lake Erie, building community through compassion and reason for a better tomorrow. If you live in the greater Toledo, Ohio area and are looking for a humanist community, then please check us out. You can reach our group at humanists.org or from a link on the podcast website, glasscityhumanist.show. At the corner of West Sylvania and North Haven streets here in Toledo is Northwestern Ohio's last abortion clinic. It's been struggling recently from people who want to regulate it out of existence at the state house and people who protest outside the clinic anytime that the clinic is open, trying to harass the women that choose to go to the clinic. And so it's a bone of contention. And I'm not sure if I had talked about this before, but the city of Toledo introduced an ordinance this year to protect patients who are using this clinic. Not specifically, I mean, it's written in general. Because of the location of the clinic, which fronts West Sylvania Avenue and is a little bit more than a car length away from the sidewalk, for years, patients who have stopped at the clinic have been targeted and harassed by anti-abortion protesters. Because the distance is so close, they've been able to come onto the clinic's property, harass the women, and then skedaddle back to the sidewalk before police would show up. And then the police would show up and say, "What do you want us to do? They're not on your property anymore." And so this has been a give and take back and forth for many years. On the east of the clinic, across North Haven, well, it sits an empty parking lot. And it's been empty. It's been a parking lot. It's been for sale for over 20 years, according to a report. And earlier this year, and the sale closed in March, the owners of that parking lot sold it to the anti-abortion group Foundation for Life. And so that has sparked some heated arguments about that. And just to kind of give a background about this issue, I have a clip, an audio clip of a recent news report from WTVG, which is a local station in Toledo, and talking about the sale of the parking lot. Here's that news clip.
This rundown parking lot full of gravel and potholes just may be the most sought after place in the city. It's all about location.
Our job isn't to make their job any easier.
I never expect them to do the right thing or the moral thing.
This parking lot on the corner of Sylvania and North Haven is just steps away from Capital Care, Toledo's only abortion clinic.
So we often have patients that park over there, mostly by mistake.
Escorts used to meet patients at their cars and shuttle them past pro-life sidewalk advocates like Bob Schoen.
They'll change their minds. So we know that it's not going to be many, but it doesn't have to be many for us. We want to help the ones that we can.
But escorts are no longer allowed on this land since it was purchased by Foundation for Life, a pro-life group. The group made an offer in February. Around that time, the city council introduced the Patient Safety Ordinance, which would ban protesters from approaching patients. But the foundation can talk to anyone on their own property.
I thought if we own the property, that would be another reason for the unconstitutionality of the ordinance itself.
Councilman Nick Comives, who introduced the ordinance, in a phone call with 13ABC, referred to the purchase as a petty move. And Capital Care says that their landlord was also attempting to buy the lot. The land was owned by Superior Uniform Sales, whose owner declined to be recorded. But in a conversation with 13ABC, he says the clinic's landlord never identified himself as such. And he sold to the foundation after the clinic's landlord didn't counter. Kristen Haiti with Capital Care says she doesn't buy it.
I'm more so, I think, angry that private businesses like Superior Uniform Sales will use their money and their power to directly facilitate patient harassment and make them less safe.
And that was a report from Kayla Molander. I do want to nitpick a little bit on the coverage. And we had this before. Earlier this year, as I said, when the city introduced the ordinance to protect patients using the clinic, the Foundation for Life had this press conference where they complained about it, said it was unconstitutional without it being through a court system yet. They just assumed it was. And the gentleman from the Toledo Archdiocese, Peter Range, I believe his name was, actually was pleased with himself that they were able to harass women. And basically what they would do is women would get out of their cars at the clinic and they would try to convince them not to get an abortion. The women would tell them to get lost. They would come at them again. They would tell them to get lost. They would come at him again, and by that time, the clinic escorts have had got them inside the building. And he seemed pleased as punch that he was able to do that. So the ordinance is needed, definitely needed. But in the coverage of that, the news stations, WTVG was one of them, they bought into the false narrative that these protesters are sidewalk advocates. If you noticed in that Kayla Molander report, the one guy was interviewed and the graphics on the screen, and she even called him a sidewalk advocate. They are not advocates. They are not advocates for the women. They're not trying to help the women. They are trying to prevent her from exercising her legal right to an abortion. They are trying to deny her that right by browbeating her, intimidating her, making her trying to feel guilty, and harassing her. And so make no mistake that these protesters are protesters. They are not advocates. So I just want to make that clear right now. These are not some people off the street like, oh, we're just trying to protect the women. No, they are not trying to protect the women. Anyway, so the interesting thing about this parking lot, and I've had personal experience with the clinic. I've helped facilitate support of the clinic when they were in danger of closing due to excessive state regulations. I participated in a protest trying to get ProMedica Hospital to sign a transfer agreement, which great. It was, they did it, and it was great because that kept the clinic from closing because the state had regulated it to where public hospitals that received state funding and couldn't sign these transfer agreements. And of course, the biggest, one of the biggest hospital systems we have here in Toledo is Mercy Health, so they would never, they were never going to sign a transfer agreement. And so ProMedica Toledo Hospital was the last resort, and they did. So I'm familiar with this clinic. I'm familiar with the protesters, the harassers that harass these women I'm not going to say daily basis because the clinic's not open every single day, but when the clinic is open, they're there. They harass these women. And this parking lot has been vacant for, as the report said, more than 20 years. Or hasn't been, nothing's been done with it. But the previous owners, Superior Uniform Sales, has allowed religious groups to congregate on this parking lot, allow them to park there. This was their base of operations for harassing the women at the clinic. And as the report said, sometimes clinic patients would mistakenly park at this parking lot because it's the only place in that general vicinity besides the clinic that you can legally park. If you park across the street, you could get towed. If you park on the street, sometimes there's no room. And so people would mistakenly park there. So that Ed Sitter, who's the executive director of Foundation for Life, says that ordinance, that patient protection ordinance, would no longer apply to them because they would be on their own land. And that's true. But the distance would still apply. So they would have to make it so that the women would park on their land, and then they could harass them all they want until they crossed over into the clinic area. But as what I was saying, I'm sorry, I got off track there for a moment. So this parking lot, the Superior Uniform Sales has been allowing these religious groups to use this parking lot for years. I had heard that they actually leased it. But I'm not sure. I'm not aware. I'm assuming that they probably got very favorable rates if they leased it. I don't think that they did. I think it was more of a verbal agreement than money actually changing hands. And so this parking lot also has an anti-abortion billboard that's been there for years. And so that company, that Superior Uniform Sales, is getting money from an anti-abortion message. So this company, and they claim that the offer wasn't countered. I looked in the Lucas County property records. The last two times that property was sold, in 2002 and 2018, it was sold for $70,000. And the sale in 2018 was an internal sale. The people that owned Superior Uniform Sales bought it from another company that the family controlled. And they also paid $70,000 for an internal sale. And so the Foundation for Life, they only paid $35,000 for that property. So Superior Uniform Sales sold it at a loss. And so that's why the person from Capital Care that you hear in the news report, Kristen Hattie, was talking about that, you know, that Superior Uniform Sales was using their money to harass women because they sold that property at a loss just so the harassers would not have to be go by the ordinance should it pass, the Toledo City Ordinance. So when this happened in one of the, it got posted on Facebook or somewhere in social media, and I made the comment that, you know, maybe somebody should open up a strip club across from Rosary Cathedral, which is the main church for the Toledo Archdiocese here in Toledo. And somebody rightfully pointed out to me that that was illegal. And they're right, because here in Ohio, and I'm sure in many places, there is zoning regulations that limit what can be built next to a church or a school. You can't open up a bar next to a church. You can't open up a strip club next to a church. I'm not sure what all other kinds of business properties can't open next to a church or a school. But that just goes to show you how insidious religious privilege is in this country today. That a religious group can set up shop across the street from an abortion clinic and interfere with somebody's legal right to make their own choices for reproductive health. And somebody else can't open up a strip club across the street from a church so that people can exercise their legal right to watch scantily clad women dancing and get their $10 buffet. And so that's how it is in this country, is that religious people are given special consideration, and it can harm other people who are trying to exercise the rights that are set in the Bill of Rights and in legal terms and law. And how anyone can think that that's right. And I get it. Anti-abortionists, they think that they're doing a good thing, that they're saving babies, but they're doing it at the expense of the women. And all this stuff that they talk about, you know, talking to the women and supporting the women and trying to help them, it's all malarkey. What they're trying to do is they're trying to prevent an abortion. That's all they're trying to do. And once they convince somebody not to have an abortion, good luck trying to get any help from them in the future. They claim that they help women and get them diapers and baby food and things like that. But, you know, for parents out there, and most rational people know that when you have a child, there is a lot more work and a lot more cost to it than a package of diapers and baby food. You know, it's a long-term commitment. And many of these right-to-life people, they don't care about that long-term commitment, as long as they're doing God's work to stop a baby being killed. That's the way that they look at it. You know, they ignore the science, they ignore the legal consensus that a human baby is not a human with rights until it is able to live outside the womb. You know, that's not a hard concept to come up with. That's what's called viability. And the legal ramifications of abortion is that you can't ban it for less than the time for viability. And when you try to do that, that's when it puts an undue burden on the women. And so the Foundation for Life got a sweetheart deal for this parking lot so that they can set up shop and not have to worry about any legal ramifications of harassing women for the people that mistakenly park in this parking lot. So what I am proposing is that when you go to this clinic, do not park in the parking lot east of North Haven Avenue, across from I believe it's a Family Dollar store. Do not park in that parking lot for whatever reason. In fact, I would probably propose that people that support the clinic should park in that parking lot and fill it up so that nobody else can park there. But that's what I would do, besides opening up a strip club across from the Catholic Church. Now that Toledo City Ordinance to protect patients hasn't come up for a vote yet. It's still under consideration. I hope it gets passed because it is needed. You know, the people that that harass these women, they'll come on the property, harass the women, leave the property, and then nothing ever happens to them. And I think there should be legal consequences. I mean, how would you like it if you were at your doctor's office and somebody came up to you and was persistent and wanted you not to go into that doctor's office, you would get upset. You know, what business is it of theirs to keep you from going to your doctor? And that's what these people do. They're not advocates. They're not out looking to help the women. They're just out there to facilitate their religious agenda, their extreme religious agenda, and prevent people from exercising their legal right to make their own healthcare choices. For more information about the topics in this episode, including links used, please visit the episode page at glasscityhumanist.show. Well, it seems that we are on the downward slope of the pandemic. As more and more people get vaccinated and we reach herd immunity, and a lot of the restrictions are getting removed, I think kind of early, but I think it's more politically motivated than scientifically motivated. And I have a problem with that. I think our laws and policies and legal framework should all be based on data, the correct data and the scientific principles and scientific method of determining if something is good or bad. I really don't think that we should just devolve into doing something because it's politically expedient. By the time many people are listening to this episode, probably in early June, the state of Ohio would have removed all of their COVID restrictions, state-mandated COVID restrictions. It's still going to be left up to individual businesses and individuals whether or not they continue wearing masks or you know, they still are suggesting people social distance, but there's not going to have the threat of legal action if you don't, which didn't happen anyway. But, and so in consultation with our board of directors, the secular humanists of Western Lake Erie, we've decided that we're going to go back to meeting in person. We have an opportunity coming up in next month, or in this coming month of June, on June 13th. We'll be meeting at the Secord Road Metro Park in one of the outdoor picnic shelters, hopefully, weather permitting, of course. You know, if it's thundering and lightning, we probably won't meet, but it is covered. So even if it's raining a little bit, you know, we'll still meet. We will be taking our normal July and August breaks from any formal meetings. Most people don't want to meet in the summertime, or they go on vacations and things like that. So normally we don't have anything formally planned. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing in the fall, starting hopefully in September, is I'm going to relaunch the group. I got to be honest, the pandemic really, really, really negatively affected our group. We went from having 25 people paid dues down to 16. I tried all manners of having online get-togethers, meeting with various different effects. Like, we had James Croft talk to us. That was widely attended. And then we had stuff where only one person would show up. So it varied widely. People want to meet in person, and I get that. Now, I want to relaunch in September, but we are dependent on venues that we can book, whether it be a library. The libraries haven't announced that they're going back to allowing meeting room rentals yet. We could go to a restaurant, but they have their own things. And there might be also where we have people who have compromised immunities that will not be able to partake in anything that we do in person because they are too vulnerable to the virus, because it's still out there. It's still going. It's still killing people. It's still harming people. And so I want to do things for people that are vaccinated. And I understand that there's going to be some of our members and some friends of our group that can't participate in in-person things. And we're going to try to keep doing some things like that. One of the things I was thinking of is live streaming our in-person events for people. You can't really participate in the live stream, but at least you can be kind of sort of there. It's a sticky wicket, as it were called, to figure out, how we're going to go do this moving forward. It's going to be touch and go. So I just want everybody to know that the group is still there, still here. We're going to try to be active. June 13th, we're meeting in person. I'm also planning I call it a protest, on World Humanist Day on June 21st, downtown Toledo, next to the Ten Commandments Monument at the corner of Erie and Adams on the courthouse lawn. And we'll have more details up soon on the events page of our website, humanistswle.org. And so we'll have what exactly I'm going for on World Humanist Day. And I'm also going to have the information up about the in-person meeting that we're going to do on June 13th. So I hope people can join us. If you know somebody, if you have a property or know somebody who has a property with meeting space, large enough for, 20 people to meet at on a regular basis, and you want to help support a humanist community, contact us and let us know and see if we can work out a deal to use it, either with a good price or maybe as a complimentary use, as a donation, whether it be like an old warehouse or something like that, something that we can have a space of our own, because I really think that the next thing that we need to do to be a viable community in this area is to have our own place. And right now we don't. And it's really hard, because I said we're dependent on the venues that we're able to book. And if they don't like us or if we cause problems, they can cancel us. The pandemic closed off the libraries. But if we had our own place. So if you have a commercial property that's taking up space that you're not using, or if you know somebody who has it, and you can give us a good deal maybe we can lease it for some money. We could talk about it. Contact us and let us know. But hopefully that's what we're planning on doing, and look for more information on our website. Do you like what you hear? Would you like to support the show so we can make it better? You can write a review for podcast apps that allow reviews, like Apple. You can share the link to our website, glasscityhumanist.show, with your friends. And you can donate to the show using the donate link on the website. Any support in this way is appreciated. Cantley McKinley High School here in Ohio, over in the Cleveland area, is one of the perennial football powers of the state and have been for decades. So it probably came to a complete shock that the Canton School District essentially fired the entire coaching staff from Canton McKinley High School. And so people would probably want to know what happened. And it seemed, and that, of course, I wouldn't be talking about it now unless it was related to the topic of this podcast. The entire, I believe it's the entire coaching staff of Canton McKinley High School were fired because they allegedly forced a kosher student to eat pork. Believe it or not, this is not this is not copy from the Onion satire site or something like that. But basically, this kid who was on the football team either missed a weightlifting session or was late to a weightlifting session. And as punishment, the coaches forced him to eat a pepperoni pizza. Now, pepperoni is pork. It's sausage. And this kid was Jewish, and he was of the Jewish faith that subscribed to he didn't eat pork. And so it was just mind-boggling that they would do something like that. But to me, it was also mind-boggling that the school board actually fired them. In the report, one of the news reports, they released a statement about it. It said, "The identified coaches engaged in actions that constituted inappropriate, demeaning, and divisive behavior in a misguided attempt to instill discipline into student athletes." School Board President John Rinaldi said, "This behavior will not be tolerated. It has been determined that 7 of the 8 members of the coaching staff involved, including the head coach, will no longer be coaches with the Canton City School District." And like I said, Canton McKinley is a perennial powerhouse when it comes to high school football. And so it had to have been a serious incident, and it had to have been enough evidence to prove that they actually did it, because they did it. They fired them. And I say technically fired because they didn't lose their jobs like immediately. What they decided, the school board decided, was not to renew their contracts. And usually, high school sports coaches, they're contracted on a yearly basis. Usually. And it's what they call a supplemental contract, because in a lot of cases, these coaches are teachers during the school year. And so that's their main source of income. And then if they're a coach of one of the teams, like football or basketball or baseball or gymnastics, then they get extra money on top of their salary to do this coaching. And it's called a supplemental contract. So these coaches did not have their coaching contracts renewed. So technically they were fired from that job. Now, personally, I think that religiously based dietary rules are silly. A lot of these religious dietary rules, they came from ancient times to address certain situations that have been solved, or we have a better understanding through modern science, such as the prohibition on eating pork. Well, if you don't prepare and cook pork in a proper manner, you can die. It can kill you. And so back in the ancient times, when Jewish people and Muslim people had these rules against eating pork, it was because people were dying, and they assumed that it had to be because it was punishment from God, not that it was salmonella or whatever bacterium that happens to come from undercooked pork. Or you can get what they call trichinosis. That's from a parasite that can be found in undercooked or raw pork. Trichinosis, if it's not treated, can affect your brain and your heart and can kill you. So that's why there's a lot of these dietary rules that, and then they come over because of tradition. They come over to modern times, even after we realize why they had that certain rule. A lot of these religions still keep these rules because of tradition, not necessarily for health or safety reasons. So as a secular person, I find religious dietary rules to be silly. However, I am equally appalled by the actions of that coaching staff and what they did. I thought it was abhorrent, outrageous. And so even though technically the child wasn't being harmed from the food, they were being harmed by the abuse of power. Because these coaches, the power structure is these coaches are in charge. They are employees of the school district. So technically they are agents of the state. And they were forcing this Jewish child, this kosher Jewish child, to eat pork in contrivance of his religious dietary rules. And so that is not any different or any less abusive than a coach talking a child into being baptized during football practice, as there's been reports of that on occasion. Also, a coach leading prayer in the locker room. We had that many years ago. A recent example was the former coach of the University of Toledo was leading prayers in the locker room. And so that is also something that I would be against. But what these coaches did by forcing this kid to eat food against his religion, it wasn't the fact that they were forcing him to violate his religious beliefs. That's a totally different matter altogether. It was the fact that they were forcing him to do something because they were abusing their power as a teacher or agent of the state. That's why it was wrong. And the fact that it was done in the name of religion makes it 10 times worse. But in the back of my mind, I can't help but think, what if he had been Muslim and against eating pork? Would the school board have fired the coaches? I don't know. I don't know if they would have. Maybe they would have. But because the victim here was Jewish, and the Cleveland area, well, you know, I'm assuming has a large Jewish community, there was a lot of pressure probably on the school board to do something. And also, we've been having, because they had that recent skirmish between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip recently, and that led to some anti-Semitic attacks in other parts of the country, I could see why some people would think that what these coaches did was an anti-Semitic attack. And it possibly could be. I can see that. You know, but you don't have to see some anti-Semitic attack to see that the coaches should have lost their jobs. And so I just kind of wanted to point that out, that you'll probably be hearing about it in social media, and people will be complaining that it's anti-Semitic or violating the child's religious freedom, which it technically is. But I think if you compare the outrages, I think the abuse of the teacher-student relationship is right at the top. Then the violation of religious freedom is right below that. And I think they're all, you know, they just kind of compound and make what these coaches did even worse. You know, especially to a kid. You shouldn't do it to a kid. Now, would there be as much outrage if it had been a college student instead of a high school student? I don't know. But I think that the Canton School Board did the right thing, and they should come down on top of that. And just because your religion forbids you from eating a certain food, you should not be called out on that. You should not be forced to violate your dietary rules, no matter who's doing it and for no matter what reason. Even though I think such rules are silly. In modern times, such rules are silly. But that's why I support freedom of religion, because that way then those people that want to eat a certain way, they can do that, and they should be allowed to do that. On the other hand, if they wanted to make everybody else stop eating pork, then I'd have to say something about it. But, you know, as long as they're not hurting any other people outside their group, they should be allowed to do what they want religiously with these dietary rules. And so, once again, people who proclaim to be Christian give Christianity a black eye. And fortunately, some people actually lost their jobs because of it. Thank you for listening. For information about the topics in this episode, including links used, please visit the episode page at glasscityhumanist.show. Glass City Humanist is an outreach of the Secular Humanists of Western Lake Erie. Sholi can be reached at humanistwle.org. Glass City Humanist is hosted, written, and produced by Douglas Berger, and he is solely responsible for the content. Our theme music is Glass City Jam, composed using the Amplify Studio. See you next time.